Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services, and I can't believe it's already June 6th. We're going to have an informational meeting, and I was hoping that more of my committee could be here, because I never know if we're going to have another committee. But I want to take time to thank Ashley and Sandy for being such wonderful staff. I mean, you've been outstanding. And I always like to give something made in Oregon to give staff. I've already given my committee members things from Made in Oregon. And so, Sandy, here's a little something. Oh, good, Jeff. And Ashley, if you could come, can you give this to Ashley? Just a token of appreciation from me for all the wonderful work that you have done for this committee. And I am pleased to say that, let me look up here on my, just a minute, I will tell you. We passed out 64 Senate bills out of how many? 100 and
over 24.
Over 124. And then we passed out 44 House bills. And how many House bills did we get?
47. For
47.
171.
So I don't know how the...
What was the number? Final number?
We passed out 64 Senate bills.
No, the total number.
Oh. Well, add 64 and 44. 108.
Yeah. I think you're in either second or third place.
No, I think...
We were tied at one point with Senator Byers' committee.
Senator Byers' committee?
Yeah.
And that may be true. Senator Pruszynski's committee, of course, would lead the way.
Oh, yeah. They do, you know.
I think they ended up at 122.
Out?
Yeah.
That's pretty close, though.
Yeah.
And my committee passed at least 6 or 7.
Nice. Very nice.
Well, I will say one session in the House, when we were over there in the Health Committee, we did 25 bills. The difference was they were all fantastic, world-shaking bills. So.
Well, I think that, to me, it's been more relaxed in the healthcare committee, and I think because we did such heavy lifting in the previous years, because there was so much transformation and change that we did, and we're hoping to limit any kind of more legislation so that Cover Oregon and our coordinated care organizations could... get the ground settled a little bit, because I think it's going to be a while before they're settled. But I would like to open an informational hearing on, and again, on the Coordinated Care Organization Baseline Metrics Update. I heard that we have gotten some new information and are very anxious to hear what you have to tell us.
And if I could first, Madam Chair, I want to thank Dr. Goldberg for the information. I haven't had a chance to dig into it yet, but I do think that's what I was looking for. So
great.
Thank you very much.
Perfect. Well, let me, for the record, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Oregon Health Authority. And what a great intro to talk about the committee metrics. Mm-hmm. X number of bills passed, who's got the best committee, and the way you measure who the best committee is and what your performance is on a number of metrics. And you got at a lot of the issues. Is it the numbers passed? Is it quantity versus quality? Do passing three really big important bills equal 10, 20 other bills? But it's exactly that kind of discussion and how we measure that, and that's exactly what we're seeking to do with our CCOs, is to have a set of metrics that measures their performance, not so much as each CCO can have bragging rights that they're the best, second best, third best, but so we can be certain that we continuously monitor and incent improvement in their care. So what we're here today to do is to really talk to you about...
Is it not going?
It's not going. You're a public teenager. You shouldn't let Bruce try to run a computer, okay?
Yes, he was just telling me about his new phone.
He's trying to... Told you I couldn't answer it.
He wanted to drive.
Well, that's a guy thing. What do you do?
Okay.
But he did ask for directions.
I did. Here, let's start over.
Bruce, this is this loose attitude. we've been doing this together for so long.
I appreciate that. So we are here today. We were here about a month or two ago, talked about the 33 metrics that we were measuring. Today, I can actually show you the results of those, and that's what we're here to do. Just as a reminder, in our healthcare transformation, we agreed to do several things. We agreed that we would reduce the per capita cost of care by 2 percentage points. And more importantly, it's the next couple of things. We agreed that we would ensure that quality of care improves and that population health improves. And then the question is, how do you demonstrate and measure that? And we also said that we would establish a quality incentive pool so that we would begin to pay for improvement, not just simply for more health care. And beginning in July, we will be paying 2% of the CCO's budget will be payment towards meeting quality standards, not simply for providing care. So, and in the future, we hope to have a greater and greater percentage of that budget go to quality of care as opposed to just more office visits. It's not about more office visits or more hospitalizations. It's about improving health. Okay, I am totally...
Yeah. Is it not moving? No, you're going to go back.
I know.
Oh.
It won't let you go forward.
Yeah.
It's the left one.
Okay.
Okay.
And you're the guy running the show, right? Okay. Just...
For the record, I'm not the IT director. Great IT director. This is our first quarterly progress report. And just so you know, this is really a baseline. And one of the things we're trying to let everybody really understand is that our oldest CCO is 310 days old today.
Yep.
So we really don't have a lot of data. So what we've done is we've gone back over the last year, 2011, and in essence created what was baseline quality data for the population in that area. So for example, in Senator Cruz's area in Roseburg, there's a CCO there, Umpqua, but there wasn't a CCO there a year ago that had a baseline. We took the Oregon Health Plan population in Roseburg and created a baseline upon which we're going to measure the performance. In Senator Mona Sanderson and Senator Shields' areas, there's two. And we took their populations, roughly what they were in 2011, and that's the baseline. That's what we're going to show you today. And that's indeed what now we will be measuring these organizations.
Bruce, how old is your youngest CCO?
Our youngest CCO is a little over 200 days old.
Okay.
November 1
okay.
is the youngest. The oldest began August 1.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
So who's the oldest?
There are about eight.
That's right.
There was a first wave of about eight or nine, and then we had
five
others, mm-hmm. and then one or two others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we have 15 up and running right now.
Bruce, the down arrow is forward.
Got it.
Only so many times I can do.
Bruce, you know, this might make the Sunday die tape. You know?
Okay. So we have 33 metrics, 17 of which we are breaking out by CCO and paying CCOs towards their improvement. And then 16, which we're looking at statewide. So those 33 measure us statewide, mm-hmm. But 17, which, and we'll show you the difference today, are what we pay the, 17 of those 33, we pay the CCOs towards their improvement. I believe I can just, knowing what I know now about the computer, I can turn things over to Tina Edlin. And she's going to take you through the rest.
For the record, I'm Tina Edlund. I'm the Chief of Policy for the Oregon Health Authority. So the 33 metrics that Bruce talked about really fall into the, when if you just look at the list, it may seem overwhelming and confusing to people, but in fact what they fall into is these seven quality improvement focus areas that were really a result of discussions not only with our federal partners, but a result of looking at our population. Medicaid population is really, by and large, women and children. So a lot of measures around women and children, a lot of our costs are driven by behavioral health and mental health issues. So we have quite a few measures that fall into that bucket of looking at behavioral health and physical health integration. And some of it is around, you know, the other drivers, the chronic conditions that really drive a lot of costs in healthcare. So those seven areas are really what you see in the report. And I hope you all have a copy. We brought copies, so okay, good. What you'll also notice in the report is not all 33 measures are here yet, and that's because it takes some time to put the baseline data together. Some of them have clinical quality data in them, and it just takes some time. So the last few of those are actually out for review by the CCOs right now. We allowed every CCO 30 days to review their data before we publish. So the CCO incentive measures were selected by the statutorily created Metrics and Scoring Committee. I'll talk about that in a little bit. They were then reviewed and approved by CMS, again, as our federal partner. They had an opportunity to weigh in on our approach and approve our approach. We depend on them in order to be able to pay out the quality incentives. So they have a voice in this as well. And as I said, for the overall measures, there's only a subset of the 17 that are actually in, the baselines are actually in here because of that issue. And the next report in August will have all the baselines for all of the metrics. So just to review quickly, the Metrics and Scoring Committee has 9 members. They serve 2-year terms. There's 3 at-large members. There are 3 members with expertise in health outcomes measurement, and there are 3 members who are representatives of the CCOs. The meetings to develop these metrics were all public meetings. There was a really robust public process around this, a lot of conversation, and really we came to a consensus agreement about what these initial metrics would be. They'll just, as an aside, they will review these metrics every year. We assume they'll stay the same for the first couple of years so that people have a chance to settle in around them, but they will be reviewed every year by the Metrics and Scoring Committee so that we can change things out if we see that something isn't quite leading us in the direction we want this transformation to go. We can change them out. The other thing we did is just selecting the metrics, and I think Senator Cruz, you see from what Bruce delivered to your office that there's a lot of technical detail in producing these metrics. We needed a technical work group different than the Metrics and Scoring Committee to actually get, you know, roll up their sleeves and get into the technical detail around these metrics. So representatives of every CCO met on an ad hoc basis to work out some of those details. We were largely driven by national indicators, but where we weren't, we needed that work. And then it went back, their advice went back up to the Metrics and Scoring Committee for endorsement. So this is just an example of what you see in this report, but what you'll also see on our website, and we'll take you out to the website to show you a little bit of that. This first one, we're not showing all of the indicators here, but this first one shows a good example of the data that we'll be displaying at the statewide level. And you'll see these displays will change over time too as we get trending data. As we get more and more data points, we'll be able to show trend, which will be, you know, really what we're looking for. The first two here are ambulatory care, outpatient utilization, so the utilization in a physician or provider's office, and the second one is emergency department utilization. Obviously, what we want to see is we want to see that emergency department utilization go down as we transform the delivery system, and we want to see provider, especially primary care visits, go up. So we'll be looking at those two together. We want to see one going in one direction, one going in the other. This last one, the third one on this page, plan all-cause readmissions. Readmissions into the hospital are really a big cost driver in the healthcare system, so we want to look at really driving readmissions down. The reason this is a statewide measure only is we have a lot of fairly small CCOs, and the numbers are way too small to really look at this at that level, so we'll follow that on a statewide level.
Tina, my question on that one basically is discharge and then readmit for any reason. That's awfully broad, isn't it? It'd be nice if it was more cause and effect sort of thing.
Senator Cruz, yes. I mean, that is the criticism of the all-cause readmission measure is exactly that. And there was a lot of discussion in the committee about whether we should use something more refined. But the committee ultimately decided that that level of background noise is the same for all facilities or all areas of the state. So that was the decision.
You know, because it depends. You know, if you have a more senior population and you're going to potentially score worse just because.
Well, and some readmissions are planned. I mean, want people to come back into the hospital for some reason. Yeah.
You're 85, you're in for pneumonia, you get out, you're feeling a little weak, you fall down, break your hip, you're back in. It wasn't because you had bad care.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's why we're looking at this one statewide, CCO by CCO.
CCO. That's right, that's right. So the next next example here shows really what we're looking at. It's a good example of what we're looking at the CCO level. What you see on this page is you see a benchmark number. It says state benchmark, but in fact what it is, it's a benchmark that's derived from national data from Medicaid. It's the highest performing Medicaid programs nationally. They all submit their data to one place. We look at that, and the committee made decisions about what percent. Mostly it's looking at the 90th percentile, which means our benchmark, there's only 10% of Medicaid programs that are higher than that benchmark. So in some cases, the committee chose the 75th percentile because of where our numbers were, and they wanted something that was attainable in a fairly short period of time to show that movement. So that's the benchmark. The state baseline is shown in that orange color here, and you can see the variation across CCOs. I think it's really important to note that the way we've designed our quality pool is you can qualify for that pool on the basis of, you have two ways into the pool. One is just on the basis of improvement. If you improve by 10% in a given year, you qualify for the pool. And if you reach the benchmark, you qualify for the pool. So it really recognizes that the CCOs are at different levels on the continuum in different places, and what we really want to see is improvement. So it was purposely designed that way.
Okay, just for the record, neither the baseline or benchmarks have anything to do with CCOs. It's what happened. It's what is what exists.
Correct.
Right. That's right. That's right. It's what exists. That's right.
The benchmark is national benchmark.
State and baseline, the baseline is Medicaid.
It's Medicaid in 2011.
Right.
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 But
for the record,
a year from now, we're
right
now, it will be performance off of that.
CCOs. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
For the CCOs. That's right.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Tina or Bruce, do we have any sense of the distinctions between the patient populations in various CCOs? Are they similar, different? I mean, in some ways, you can almost have a paired comparison between family care and health share. But I'm wondering if, you know, is there any creaming that goes on? Do certain CCOs get sicker, have a sicker population base than others, so that we can, can we actually compare apples to apples?
Let me take that. Senator Shields, we risk adjust our CCOs based on the severity of illness. Okay. and we pay them differently based on that risk-adjusted score. We've been doing this for the last about 15 years, mm-hmm. and there's a nationally recognized methodology. And there are differences in the distribution of illness within the CCOs. We pay them differently. In terms of the quality metrics, we make no distinction on that severity. And part of the reason is exactly what we've been talking about mm-hmm. now, is that you're paid for your ability to be where you're at and improve. So if there is a CCO that has a much more difficult population and it's down here, and there's one that has, for lack of a better term, an easier population and it's up here, they're each going to get credit for their improvement. Mm-hmm. It isn't that one. And so we risk adjust for payment, but we haven't risk adjusted here. And that's because they're really, quite frankly, aren't very good methodologies to do that. The methodologies that risk adjust around payment. Mm-hmm. There isn't a risk adjustment around prenatal care or that kind of thing.
It just might be maybe an appendix that you could put into this report for the future to show which ones have the riskier or the yeah. more complicated patients. Again, because I think what we would want to be careful is to not compare family care to health share necessarily, because they don't have the same population base, right?
Correct.
That's a good idea.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, on the other hand, the way that the risk adjustment score is, it really takes, it's the burden of chronic illness and of age within a population. Uh-huh. So when you look at some of these metrics, timeliness of prenatal care, the risk adjustment score may not reflect the difference in young women in the plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really will reflect the fact that a plan has more diabetics or more people with HIV or more people with congestive heart failure. But I mean, the risk adjustment scores are publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
Just would be careful about
reading too much into
equating mm-hmm. that risk with how that reflects in the quality metrics, because it's just I think what you're getting at, which is ultimately where we'd like to go with some of this, is that I think some of the issues around health literacy and social determinants of health can really vary from population to population, and that really does make the ability to interact with and populations challenging, uh-huh. and we should be measuring that some way.
Yeah, but Bruce, your risk formula has been working pretty well, and,
yep.
and to mess with that, I think it would be absolutely foolish. And Senator Shields, what I like and what I don't like here is, because the baseline is what existed, and so if you're at 49%, you aren't being penalized for being at 49%, you're being rewarded for improvement.
Or 48% or 49%.
Yeah, or whatever. The downside to that is if you're at a high number, the higher the number you're at, the harder it is to make improvement. And somehow making adjustments in that, it becomes slightly more complicated.
That's why
think.
Once you reach the benchmark, you've got you qualify.
Right.
Because you can never, you're not going to go from 90 to 95%,
right.
is a lot harder than going from 50 to 55%.
Well, and you get to a certain percentage, and it's statistically impossible to get above it.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
But if we do find that the benchmark maybe could be moved, what? Or where are we on deciding a movement of a benchmark after a few years?
Madam Chair, the Metrics and Scoring Committee has had that discussion about what they might do in future years, but they haven't made any decision yet. And it's just sort of, they want to see how this plays out and then have that discussion. But they haven't ruled that out at all.
Well, I'm assuming that CMS had to approve the benchmarks, so we would have And so the national standard is an easy one for them to approve.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes.
But once we get everybody up to the benchmark, we'll have a couple of choices. Some where the benchmark's high enough, we may say, that's great, let's now move on to a different measure. Mm-hmm. If the benchmark is one that is very low because no one around the country does well at that, then we might want to raise that benchmark and seek to lift even higher.
That was actually a stated goal, that we set the benchmark.
Right.
Well, chances are we won't get there between now and February.
No. We're in this for the long haul.
That's right. So the next page is just another example of the kind of variation we see between CCOs. This is follow-up after hospitalization for mental illness. And again, just an example of a measure that was particularly important to members of the committee to really be looking at issues around behavioral health, mental illness, and substance abuse. The next couple of pages, again, is to show you that I showed the statewide
real
numbers.
Quick question. Why is Eastern Oregon and Primary Health of Josephine County, they don't have a metrics for mental health?
I think that the numbers, those numbers are suppressed because the numbers were too small.
Okay.
And so the committee made a decision that if it was under 30, that they would suppress the numbers.
Okay.
So for, and they also made a decision that for CCOs where the numbers are too small, they'll be held harmless for that metric in the quality pool. The next two just show at the CCO level the metrics that I showed you at the statewide level. The first one is emergency department utilization. And again, what we're looking for here is for that to decline, to get below the benchmark number. So lower is
everybody's
better.
Above the benchmark on this. And we'd like to bring everybody down.
Down, that's right. That's right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This was a fascinating chart to me because I think this is exactly the thing that we need to be keying in on. And what I noticed is that if you look over on the patient-centered primary care home enrollment, family care had some of the lowest patient-centered primary care home enrollments, but yet had some of the lowest emergency department utilization, which is interesting to me. And I was wondering if you had a hypothesis about that.
Senator Shields, I don't have a hypothesis, but I will say that one of the goals and one of the discussions we've had with these metrics is that the CCOs can come together and there'll be peer-to-peer learning about exactly those kinds of issues so that you can have conversations and look at what one CCO did to improve their metric over another. But I don't have a specific hypothesis about this particular measure for them.
If I could, Madam Chair, one thing that I think we're going to have to figure out is how small practices, do they have a role in this, or should they just be gobbled up by hospital systems and in the name of coordination? I think that's something that I think we've really got to figure out is it possible for a practice that has three providers and maybe one mental health counselor to get certified in a way that they can, it's not going to be too costly for them to do, because I think the elements of a primary care home are possible in a small clinic. It just needs to have the time to implement it and the expertise. And I was wondering if you have given any thought to how that works out. Or
yeah, we've started to think about that. And one of the things is I think it's that, and we're hoping that this is some of the things that CCOs provide, is that there are some of those services that might create some economy of scale between practices that a CCO might be able to provide. So, for example, a two-person practice that might not have enough volume to have a community health worker might be able to share a community health worker with two other practices, and that's something, you know, a service that a CCO could do. But I think that there are some ways to do that. And I think some of the things are, and we've been talking about this, is Are there, do we have to think about some different standards for smaller practices in some way? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think you raised some really good issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think, you know, my experience is that a lot of the smaller practices will just spend more time with the patient, perhaps, and rather than breaking things up into five. So there are a number of ways that you can get to, I think, the principles of it. But I'm just glad it's on your radar screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, this is a very impressive document. It really looks like you're tracking all the right things and mm-hmm. doing
Thanks.
It in a very good way.
Thank you.
It's great to have. I mean, this is why you have the data. And then what's great is what Tina really talked about is, you know, 6 months from now, when you see somebody, one plan change dramatically, mm-hmm. everybody's going to look to that plan and say, what did you do?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, well, hopefully first they'll know.
and luck of the draw.
Well, sometimes it is. But hopefully they'll know that they had a strategy and that it's transferable and that people can learn from this. And this is how you move the needle. It's shine the light. And we felt, we've been getting a lot of positive feedback, which is great, and it's not all done. You'll see it when we get to the financial metrics. They're still being developed.
Mm-hmm.
But we felt it was really important to get started.
Yeah,
to
great.
Get this out there, not wait for perfection, but to be able to start to create an expectation for both CCOs and those of us that are monitoring CCOs that this is what we're looking for, and this is, and this all gets published and is on the web, and it's out there for everybody, and we think it's a great thing. And I think everybody's health plan should be like this.
Mm-hmm.
I wish mine was.
So the next slide, again, just shows the partner to emergency department utilization, which is the outpatient utilization or provider visits in a provider office. And again, what we hope to see is this increase, especially for primary care, as we see emergency department utilization decrease. So now I'll talk a little bit about the financial data. As Bruce said, this is really it's preliminary data. As we all know, that, you know, when you submit claims, it takes a while for payment to come in. It takes a while for all the review of claims to happen. So there's a claims lag, and what you see in our data here is that represented. We tried to include the last quarter of 2012 in the financial data, so we actually have some CCO data on the financial front. But it's very preliminary, and that will be, as we get these numbers, as the numbers continue to come in, you'll see these numbers change. You shouldn't regard them as stable at this point. They'll be recalculated as we get more data in. But as Bruce said, it was really important to us to get something out and start to look at this, because monitoring costs is really key to what we're doing. There's also, as you'll see in the benchmark on the utilization and the cost data, on the benchmarks you'll see that it says they're in development, and we're working with Milliman to actually they have a way of looking at well-managed programs versus loosely managed programs, and we'll be using those benchmarks to judge ourselves against. So those are in development. Our goal is that they'll be available and be included in the next report.
I find it interesting. I mean, already labs and radiology, the pre-CCO baseline, and then the October-December 2012 change. I mean, there's a change except for mental health visits.
Right. You see, and exactly, there are things that we also, there.
The
we
mental health visit, maybe you...
There are things we would like to see go up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there are things we would like to see go down.
Yeah.
And we are pairing both the number with, on the next slide, with the dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was important because you could have emergency... I'll give an example. You could see emergency department spending go down, but that merely be because someone paid emergency departments less. And so you want to look at, you don't want to just look at the payment. you want to also look at the utilization. Mm-hmm. And so by looking at both utilization, you know, numbers versus as well as payment, we'll be able to get a clearer picture. I mean, in the end, we're looking for the dollars to be within the global budget. But we also want to be certain that the reason that that CCOs are staying within that global budget isn't just because they're either denying care or they're cutting back on what they're paying. We want to see transformation of care. So when you look at things like hospital utilization, I mean, we don't want to just see hospital costs go down, because that could be just a reflection of bargaining a better price, mm-hmm. or just paying a different price, as opposed to really showing trends in care changing, that admissions have gone down and lengths of stays have changed. So it's going to take a while to do that, but this is really about showing, we hope, how the patterns and the utilization of care is changing, and is really an important way to monitor what's happening within that global budget. So it's both this piece as well as the bookend of the quality piece. And what we always talk about is this is really what makes it very different from what was managed care of the 80s, where managed care of the 80s was really just looking at the dollars, mm-hmm. and just managing those down and really not looking at why that was and not really holding people accountable to the quality, mm-hmm. side as well. And it's really the two pieces, prudently using resources and looking at how we improve quality. So
I am always concerned about capital construction. And so many of our healthcare dollars are going into big buildings. And I take Salem Hospital as an example. They're just proliferating. And I'm wondering, is that really necessary? That's part of what drives up healthcare costs. But that really can't be followed in this, or can it?
Chair Monis Anderson, you know, the short answer is not in this report. One, let's be clear, this is about Medicaid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And,
yes.
And this is really about what's going to amount to 10 to 15% of, you know, a hospital's revenue, et cetera.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of data and information on hospitals and utilization, and obviously that can drive costs. And I think that's one of the things we've been talking about quite honestly and very frankly with a lot of the hospitals, who I think are beginning to understand that if 50-60% of our healthcare expenditures actually are on hospital care between inpatient and outpatient, and we're looking to lower the cost of care, and at the same time, we want to make investments in outpatient primary care, preventive services, that the reductions are going to need to come from hospitals. And the question is how we transition to that, how we begin to help move that model from being rewarded for actually providing less care as opposed to more care, and not making the kinds of investments in infrastructure that hopefully we won't need in 10, 20 years. I mean, that's our long-term goal. We're just getting started.
Mm-hmm. So you want to go out to the website? It's on the tabs across the top?
No.
You don't want to know?
I'm going to let you do that.
Okay.
Before
I
you leave,
myself
you can't leave.
I'm not leaving.
He's just not
okay.
going to...
Madam Chair, if I could, and I'm sorry I had to step out. It seems there's a few other issues going on in the building at the moment.
We might get out of here.
Yeah. My question was back to ED utilization. Do you have anything that shows a relationship between ED utilization and at least 7-day-a-week availability of clinics? because I think that would be an, you know, because I'm looking at, you know, like for Umpqua Health Alliance, where there isn't a clinic open 7 days a week. So the ED utilization on weekends just skyrockets. Okay, I mean, I think that sort of relationship might be interesting to
We don't,
at.
But we hope that that's exactly the kinds of questions mm-hmm. this data brings and that people will start to look at it in exactly that way.
Which kind of feeds into yours a little mm-hmm. bit, Jim.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, at some point we might want to bring in Dr. Robert Lowe from OHSU, who seems to be the quintessential expert on ED utilization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember he showed me a couple of studies where if you just expanded the hours of your practice by 1 or 2 hours to 7 o'clock at night,
yeah.
you'd have a statistically significant decline in ED utilization.
Mm-hmm. So now,
mm-hmm.
a portion of the CCO's payment is going to be based on lowering that emergency department utilization. So there's now
incentive.
An incentive to actually do that where before there really wasn't. So that's exactly the kind of change that we're not looking to tell people how to lower that number, but we're providing an incentive to do that. And we hope different practices and different places will do it in ways and they'll learn.
I just think, I mean, there's some relationships here that I think just in the healthcare community that I think we need to, hopefully are going to be explored in ways they haven't been before, so.
Okay. So real quick and we'll finish up.
Yeah, we'll do this real quickly. I just wanted to show you quickly what we have available. This report in the future will really be primarily published on the web rather than in paper every time because it'll get bulkier and bulkier.
I want paper.
Okay. Yeah, I like paper, too. I'm getting there, though.
We're special, okay?
You'll notice I didn't provide you with the link to all
I know.
Of
them. I know. Thank you.
But I will.
Yes.
Why I didn't give it to Sandy.
So the quarterly report is displayed on the web by CCO and by Metric, and I can just show you very, very quickly. I'll just show you. Let me see. Just show you one and quickly again to show what all their scores on each of the metrics and what the benchmark is and what the state baseline is are shown for every metric for that CCO. So then, because that's going to be important to some people, and some people then are going to want to be able to see how all of the CCOs do on a specific metric. So we can go out and we can look at, the one we just saw. So the outpatient and the ED visit rates right next to each other. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty quick way for people to look at all of the data in one place. And as I said, over time, we'll have dashboards that actually show trends. So you can see how an individual CCO has done over time and how a specific metric has improved over time.
And just keep in mind that Lori and I are going to be here for a while. And we like paper. We're old school. So.
I'm transitioning, but I still.
But still.
But I still like. I just can understand it better.
So. Madam Chair, is that, are you?
I
ask a question slightly off subject? Do you really want to mess in the food fight here in Salem?
What?
Do you really? We're hoping to be able to encourage mediation.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I ask, Bruce, you know full well that conversations we had before session was we weren't going to get involved in the organic activities, and there's a bill that kind of messes with that. So I'm having trouble trying to figure out the appropriate direction to go on that.
That's why you're a legislator and I'm not.
No, it's tough because I think the politics are going to come, are going to be very apparent in possibly with the various CCOs, the competition, mm-hmm. And then maybe wanting to create their own CCO. I mean, that's how I envision Salem, wanting to just be their own rather than be connected with the one that has been established in this community. And it's a culture that, I mean, it's a very difficult issue for me to see how it's all going to play out, but.
But Madam Chair, I think if they attempted that, they would fail under their own weight. And at some point in time, some failures are helpful to inform the rest of the world as to what not to do. So,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
That's why it's kind of a mixed bag on this thing.
Collaboration is hard.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, we've talked about this. We were quite frankly surprised at the number of CCOs we had so quickly. Mm-hmm. We're pleasantly surprised, but we didn't think we'd have 95% of the Oregon Health Plan population in CCOs right now, of which the oldest is 300 days old. It was a short time period to get together. It takes a lot of work to collect people that have competed against each other for a long time to develop the kinds of relationships. And so I guess I'm more optimistic that with some time and some talk and some mediation, people can come together. We just saw in Klamath Falls where there was a tremendous, they didn't even have a CCO. They don't have a CCO up yet because there's been different kinds of disputes between different parts of the community, and they've just actually gotten together and signed a memorandum of understanding, and we anticipate that they'll have a CCO operational come end of the summer at some point. So it takes different communities amount of time.
Yeah, and even those who are the farthest along still go through some very difficult rough patches, and that's to be expected.
Correct. We would imagine that some of the great love and feeling that some organizations got when they started, some of that might fray a bit as they get a little older. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Hard to imagine, isn't it?
But I think this is the process of a community coming together, and it's hard work. So we all need to do all we can to keep the process moving forward.
I just wanted to try to put you on the spot a little bit.
I know.
Okay, just to let you all know before you leave, and we'll have to get this message to maybe by email to Senator. Thank you, both of you, to Canopen, Senator Hayward. But we are in the process of developing a work plan for the interim, and I would, if there are certain things that you would like to see, like your suggestion of that person from OHSU. But if there are issues that you feel that we should have in September and what we need to be working on and in December, but not just that, but things that maybe we should be working on too, let me know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, with that, we are adjourned.